It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
I will say again, after having that, hearing that commercial, Measure Z is a good thing. That's the one tax initiative that I thought was decent. And as I've told you before, I was part of the Blue Ribbon Committee that created it. But I was the holdout. I was the black sheep that was trying to look for grant money and doing everything but raising, you know, the taxes initially that first time around. But it worked out. It was a unanimous vote, and we got her through. And the rest is history if you go out and take a look at the zoo. And I was out there the other day with John, who's the latest zoo director, and, you know, looking at this new exhibit, which is all about Asia. And, oh, boy, is that going to be nice. Nice, nice, nice. Today's Daily Buzz question, should Shakespeare be taught in schools? Yeah, let us know, KMJNow.com. The Daily Buzz is sponsored by the Boz Allergy, Asthma, and Sinus Centers. Also, Jim Franklin. Jim Franklin, let's see. You know, we were supposed to hear from Jim Franklin today, who's over in Ukraine. And no formal arrangements have been made to connect with him. Hopefully he will get through. Hopefully he'll be able to call us. Next week, we will talk with our friend Serge in Kyiv, the musician who we've talked to a number of times. And hopefully the two of them have connected, because I gave them, you know, everybody's phone number over there, each other. And it would be great if they were to call in today together. That would be kind of cool. But as it is, our own Jim Franklin is there, and we may hear from him today. But Jim Franklin live, broadcasting from Ukraine this Sunday from noon until 2, that will be heard exclusively on KMJ and streaming at KMJNow.com, and make sure you check it out. Hopefully that will come off as planned. Now, something I've been talking about since about Wednesday when this research came out. A series of papers. When will domestic violence turn fatal? And California researchers have found a common thread in these killings. And I took great interest in this because in my family, there have been instances of domestic violence, you know, going back. I'm not going to say who, what, or any of that. A lot of it is spurned by the use of alcohol, which is a shame. But you know, those people that were doing that were able to get help and do something about it. But if you look at some of the Sacramento cases that spawned this research, you've got the case of David Moro Rojas, who is the father of three. And he provided a lot of Sacramento residents with a very grisly example of why and how this type of thing takes place up in that area or anywhere in California, and how detrimental and how damaging it can be. On February the 28th, Mora gunned down his three daughters with their chaperone inside of a church in Sacramento, and then killed himself. But, you know, before that date, Mora, you know, revealed his true target of his rage, and that was his former partner, the mothers of the three girls, the mother. And, you know, the media has not named her because she was a victim of domestic violence abuse. In a passage from April of 2021, a request for a restraining order, she said, the mother of the three daughters that were lost, she said that, you know, it's not been good. He threatened to kill me if he ever caught me cheating. He called me a whore. He said he wanted to kill me. He choked me in the past. You know, while the allegations of choking, you know, are often lumped in with a lot of different threats and domestic violence, other physical assaults, you know, take place, obviously. There's a former police officer up in the Sacramento area for more than two decades of research has revealed that strangulation is one of the major calling cards of manipulative, controlling, dangerous men. Strangulation. Isn't that sweet? And a number of Sacramento County law enforcement agencies and domestic violence advocates have put together a bunch of work protocols recommended by this former police officer, whose last name is Bianco, and others who work at the Training Institute on Strangulation Prevention, and there is such a place, and some have documented a steep increase in strangling reports that they link to improved tools of communication. But strangling in the state of California is way, way up. And this is one of the telltale signs of something very ugly coming if you happen to be an abused female. Men with a history of strangling women are one of the deadliest symptoms and examples of domestic violence in the state of California. It's horrible stuff. 75% of those that have been involved in bad relationships have all had an experience at one time or another with attempted strangulation, you know? And if you look at peace officers responding to domestic violence, to use the same number again, 75% of those officers who have responded to domestic violence, who have been attacked by these assailants, they've died. This is according to an analysis by the social change organization Alliance for Hope International. So here's what's going on. Quote, "We have correlated stranglers to mass shootings," said Casey Gwynn, who's a former prosecutor and president of the Alliance for Hope. "We have correlated stranglers to familicide, which is what Sacramento is seeing a great hike in with families suffering from this sort of an attack. We've correlated stranglers to cop killers. We've correlated stranglers to men who kill women in America. And the majority of women in America who are killed have been strangled before they are killed." End quote. I shouldn't be laughing. So that's one of the signs, ladies. If it's an attempted strangulation, that often winds up in death. Get out of there. Get out of there and do whatever you can do. Now, amongst the individuals participating in the research, there's a former prosecutor who set out on a mission to support children and adults who survived domestic violence following the deaths of a couple of young San Diego mothers in the research, Cassandra Stewart and Tamara Smith, who had been killed by their intimate partners in prior calls to police. Both went on record saying that they'd been choked. There had been an attempt at strangulation. And in the research and a review of these particular cases and their deaths, you know, it was learned that strangulation was the ticket, the introduction to all kinds of things that ultimately led to their deaths. And the researchers, once they realized these two women had been choked, strangled, etc., the researchers called through thousands of San Diego police reports to see how many other victims of domestic violence had reported this type of an attack. San Diego, down there, yep, where it's just like Sacramento, there seems to be a popularity with using choking as a method to send a message to your female domestic partner. It's horrible. So the researchers' curiosity and doggedness is what led to one large bit of research and involving physicians in emergency medicine that described the landmark research that ultimately has reshaped laws and medical protocols and given direction to scientific research and police procedures and victim advocacy, and serves as a warning sign for you females that maybe this has gone too far and you need to get out. And we're going to go through all of this, I promise you. In the meantime, if you would like to add something on your own, a personal experience, ladies, please, 490-5858. Every time something like this comes up in news, it's a real hard one to get into, and it's a hard one to get responses on. But once the responses get rolling, we learn from them. But it can be very sad, and it can be very telltale. So, you know, please, if you want to share, that would be great. Again, the numbers, 490-5858, 800-776-5858. We'll take a breather here, and we'll come back, and we'll look even deeper into this research for specific warning signs that might be able to help you in the future, okay? Okay, this is KMJ.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
Ray Appleton. Now.
Right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJnow.com.
Finally, we're getting into this piece, this research here in California on domestic violence and some of the telltale signs, some common threads in domestic violence that might be used as warning signs if indeed you're in a violent relationship. Phone calls, though. Gabriel, you're on KMJ. What's going on?
I keep hearing you address it to the women. Of course, there are a lot of women that this is affecting, but there's also a lot of men, I think, that are getting treated like this from the women. And I know it's not common, it's not spoken about all that often, but I just know from my own personal relationship, I've been strangled or had hands around my neck quite a few times. I've been chased down with cars, had knives pulled on me, all sorts of things like that. And I'm larger than the person that's doing that, so I like to think that if I really had to fight for my life, I'd be okay.
Yeah.
But you don't know, and I think that there's a lot of men out there that are experiencing it. And like I say, they think they'll be fine, but
it's an obvious one, but it's underreported too. Statistically, it's less than 1% in terms of reported cases of domestic violence where the male is the victim. And there doesn't seem to be any common thread on that side of the gender scale as far as what to look out for if indeed you're in one of these relationships, and is there something, one act of violence over another, that is telltale saying this is going to get ugly and this is going to happen? And there is, to a degree, and we will get to that. All right, but again, men, and thank you, sir, the stats I came up with the other day when I was looking into this, it's less than 1%, but that may be a reporting issue. Okay, because men may be kind of embarrassed to report that they've been beaten up and abused by a woman. And for the most part, it's females. Now, on the female side of the equation, if you haven't figured out yet by this research, what is that telltale sign that says, man, I got a problem and I got to get out of Dodge and I better, come up with a restraining order or something, and we've already hit it. It's choking. That's the thread. That's the common thread in domestic violence cases in California that indicate this could go farther. This could be worse. And this is when psychiatrists and individuals who are, in the business of saving you from such horrible things, this is that point where they say, you got to watch out. You got to watch out. And I knew somebody would call up and say men are abused too, yeah. But again, it's just a very, very small percentage. And this is, I want to stress also, an area where police themselves are often the most in harm's way in the state of California statistically. It seems that this is a type of crime where you send one or two officers out, and for the most part now it's two, because in the past statistically one has not been able to handle these situations. Where they can be injured, they can suffer some very dire consequences, and you just can't take it for granted. Is there one thing over another that fires up domestic violence? Is it alcohol? Is it drugs? There doesn't seem to be an answer there. That there is a common denominator that makes somebody go a little crazy. We know that can happen, but sometimes it's just the fact that somebody's not stacked right, So apparently it's this issue of putting one's hands around another one's neck that indicates to those in the research and those in law enforcement, this is a bad thing. And I should be doing something about it. I should move on if there's the courage to do so. And that's the hard part. The problem that we see in California, and oddly enough, according to this research, more so in California, is that women, and I better take a break pretty soon, huh? Am I going a little, or did we already take the break? Oh, we did? I couldn't remember. I'm so interested in this. Yeah, we did take the break. Women in the state of California seem to recommit to the offender more so than any other state in the union. Why is that? In other words, they go back with the guy. This is an individual that has hurt them and maybe hurt them very bad on one or two occasions, and yet they go back with them. They remarry them. They rekindle the relationship. And we see this a lot in California as opposed to other states. I'm sure everybody has seen somebody in their family where you've worked, you know, long and hard to get them out of a nasty relationship, and all of a sudden this guy is back in the picture again. And what causes that? Why? Why do women do that? Ladies, can you answer that? Why do you go back to the guy that's gone after you in the past? Why do you go back to the guy that maybe has a police record? That has, you know, something on file publicly that indicates you could be in harm's way if you get together with him again. But yet in California, this happens more often than not. You go back to him. And that's what I don't understand. If I were a female and somebody tried to strangle me, somebody popped me in the face, somebody did something, somebody threatened me with a gun, somebody beat me up with a belt, I'm going to go back with them? What is that security issue there that says, okay, you're forgiven, let's try and work this out, and then it just gets worse? And it does in this state. If you'd like to commit to that, ladies, with some sort of theory, I'm asking you, 490-5858 and 800-776-5858. This is something that's going to be researched for a long, long time because it's a big killer. And it's a big, ugly tool that we see here in California that brings a lot of damage to families. It kills kids. You know, it kills female spouses. And it's a scary situation that really, even though there's a common denominator, there's a common thread that strangling may be the one thing that's the high sign that says you better get out of there. But there's nothing in the way of establishing why this happens again. Like, is it drugs? Is it alcohol? And it doesn't seem to be. It just is what it is. And then, you know, this whole issue of going back with them, more so in this state than any other. It's wild. Phone calls. Vince, talk to me. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Okay, great. Anyhow, I think I know why the people in California are going back. It's a financial reason. The women in this state, everything's real expensive, and you have to, if you want to live indoors, you need money. And if you're getting beat, and that's how you're surviving, and you can't survive on your own, then you're going to go back to someone that supports you, even though they beat you. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that kind of makes sense. I mean, it's like a financial thing. It's like a security thing, a very bad security blanket. And that winds up, in some cases, getting these women killed because they've gone back with these individuals who have brought great harm to them in the first place. Vince, thanks. I think it's kind of an obvious conclusion that that's the reason why, but isn't that a shame that there isn't something that a female can fall back on if they have been separated out of this family where the male spouse is of danger to the individual? You know, I mean, that is something that puts kids in harm's way too. As that case in Sacramento where three of those kids were killed along with their chaperone in church. Not good. Phone numbers, if you want to contribute on this, and this research, again, it's just all based in California. And I'll cite the research and let you know where you can read more about it before we get out of here. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. Domestic violence is a very, very big crime in the state of California. As far as states go, we're rated rather high in terms of domestic violence turnarounds and it happening, you know, over and over again. If there is a number two to strangulation in terms of something that is very bad and very scary in the state of California, it's kicking, using your feet. That's another one. And you'd think that really is not all that dangerous, but think about it. Think about the differences in physical proportion between a man and a woman. So kicking is going to be doing some heavy-duty damage along the routes here. So we'll take a pause for the cause on news. We'll come back and we'll take some more calls. We'll continue to go through this research on domestic violence in California. 490-5858, Toll free from anywhere is 800-776-5858. This is KMJ. I'm Ray Appleton.
The Ray Appleton Podcast. Right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJNow.com.
It's free.
Now, Ray Appleton.
Getting back to this issue on domestic violence in the state of California, a report that came out on Wednesday. Research has been in the field for quite some time, and we're seeing some common threads and some, things to avoid if indeed you're in a relationship like this. I'm glad to see some ladies calling in now. Becky, you're on KMJ. Talk to me. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi there.
This didn't happen to me, but my girlfriend's daughter, she was in an abusive relationship for several years with this guy, and she would leave him, and then she'd end up going back. And 2 years ago, no, a year and a half ago, he murdered her and buried her body. And she's pretty sure it was choking because he had done that in the past. And they only found her out in the desert, naked, and basically bones, because the brother turned him in. And it took him another year to find him, because he took rough running. So this happened in Texas. So I don't think it's just California. I think it's just a sign all the way across the board.
Oh, I totally agree. It just so happens this research took place in California. But I think reasons probably don't vary a lot from state to state. Yeah.
Right. So I just know that he had choked her in the past, and she would call her mom every single day. And the sad part is he killed her on her 30th birthday.
Oh, God. Oh. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Becky. Hard story. And that's also something that popped up in this research. Very often, these male assailants will pick a day of importance in their female's life, like their birthday or something. Why? Because they're relaxed, their guard's down, they're in a positive mood, they don't see it coming, that type of thing. Horrible. Horrible. All right, Susie, you're next on the Appleton program. Talk to me.
Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Just two quick points. With all due respect, I know that you have the best of intentions with presenting this topic, but I really think you need to have a mental health professional sitting along next to you to talk that has experience with this, because I kind of think you blew the guy off that called in. That took a lot of cojones for that man to call in and say he had been assaulted, because I used to run groups of men who were sexually assaulted, and a lot of them had been also, victims of this kind of situation.
But if you let me clarify again. This research is about men attacking women, period. It's not about, women attacking men. That's maybe a different bit of research. So I'm sure it happens. I know it happens. But that's not the point of this particular research. This particular research is to find a common thread in male attacks on females and to be used as, a warning sign. So if there indeed is a separate, and I can even check with this particular group, True Groups did the research on this, if they're doing the same thing with, men as victims, I'd be more than thrilled to talk about that too. And I don't know that I really need a mental health professional sitting next to me, because all I'm doing is asking your opinion of what these mental health aficionados who put this report together, if you feel it's accurate or not. Susie, thank you. But that's another issue. You see, this is about females as victims in California. Bill, you're on the air. Hi.
I'm going to change my whole venue because of the fact that you're only discussing females. I'm sorry. Good day.
Okay. Yeah, I know that let's establish that this happens to men too. All right? But predominantly, statistically, overwhelmingly in the state of California, the victims are females. And the point of this research was to try and find a predictor, something that is a sign that female could be in danger and needs to get away from that relationship with that particular male. So, I mean, is it clear now? I'm not trying to play one side against the other or whatever. This research is about females being attacked in the state of California, and is there a common bread, and it is. It's strangulation. So, and as I mentioned, it was mentioned in this bit of research that males that are attacked, it's underreported because they're embarrassed. It doesn't happen to men. That can't happen to me. How did I allow this to happen? That type of thing. I don't want my friends to know. So there's probably, you know, more male victims than we would be led to believe in any research that may be going on out there. But it's underreported on their part because of embarrassment. And that's a word that was used verbatim in this particular bit of research and trying to ascertain, you know, if there's a common thread between, you know, the victim and the individual attacking. So I hope I made that clear. All right. I'm not trying to, you know, put down the fact that men aren't bothered by this either. Violence is violence, and it's wrong, and it needs to be treated. And but again, the overwhelming victims in the state of California happen to be female, and that's why this report is about females. All right, there. And the question was asked in my email, and we went through this. Does this particular research cite any reasoning for these attacks, such as drugs, alcohol, etc.? And again, no. That there was not any quantitative or qualitative work done on that, as far as this study goes, whether you believe it or not. That says it was, you know, booze that fired up this particular incident. It was alcohol, or I mean, drugs that fired up this particular incident. No, they're just coming off the attack and what the attack was about, who was attacked, and the reasons why. Who knows? I think now this is me talking. This is me talking. I was raised by two women, as most of you know. No father in the family. I was raised exclusively by my mother and her mother. And they hit me all the time from everything from a woman's point of view on whatever. That's how I was raised. That's what I got. And I remember my mother and my grandmother talking about domestic violence, and it was my mother's mother who was the victim of domestic violence. She was hurt very badly by one of her husbands, and he was a boozer, and he did some horrible things to her. But there was always their conclusion: any man that would hit a woman had huge self-esteem problems, massive. Otherwise, why would they do that? Why would they go after somebody that was weaker than them? And when you're looking at body size and body mass and strength and all of that, I mean, that's really just a low thing to do, you know. And you're playing tough guy, Mr. Machismo, whatever, by hitting a woman. Obviously, you have ego problems. Obviously, there's something going on there that shouldn't be going on because of the differences in physiology and anatomy. It's just bad. And so my grandmother and my mother, I have to go along with them. You know, that man has obvious, you know, esteem problems to go and attack a woman, right? I mean, I can't imagine it. I can't imagine hitting a woman. I can't. And I won't. And I haven't. And let's take a break. It's News Talk 580 1059 KMJ and the Ray Appleton Program. Getting in a little deep today, I understand, but I think we're all on the same page right now, right? I hope.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJnow.com.
It's free.
I will tell you again that we're supposed to hear from Jim Franklin today over in Ukraine. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. It's a big time swing over there. So it's in the wee hours as we speak in Ukraine, wherever he is. He will be broadcasting his Sunday show live, though. Jim Franklin live on Sunday here at KMJ. It will be from Ukraine from 12 to 2. And that'll be, you know, exclusively on KMJ or streaming at KMJnow.com. And hopefully he's safe and hasn't been, you know, kidnapped by the Russian army. But and then next week we'll talk to our friend Serge in Kyiv, the musician who has now moved back into his studio. Apparently he's like living there while he creates this music and thinks it's the safest place to be. So and good for him. I mean, he's got some courage, that guy, to be living in a studio while he's, you know, there's a war going on all around him. And there's one other individual, too, that I've asked to participate in maybe a chat. And I feel safe I can mention his name now. The former music director of the Fresno Philharmonic. He's one of the more popular conductors we've had. A little bit idiosyncratic. Ted Kutcher. You might remember that name. He has a permanent residence in Lviv, Ukraine. He has a Ukrainian wife. He does a lot with Ukrainian orchestras. And he's been keeping me abreast of things in that particular end of the world on a regular basis. And I put a note out to him saying that we'd really like to talk to him since because of his Fresno connection and let us know how it's going. He's in a situation where he's now working in Poland, working with some musicians there, but his wife is still alone there in the family home in Lviv. And we wish her well, all right? One of the stories coming out of Ukraine today is why so many Ukrainians are lining up to get back in the country. Millions and millions and millions and millions and millions have left via Poland and some of the other surrounding countries. And now, I mean, the line was very, very long to get out. And now the line is hugely long to get back in. What's going on and why? Do they feel that it's safe? Is there a number of Ukrainian men that want to come back home to fight because, you know, they've been elsewhere for a while? There are varying reasons as to why. Also, there are many, many Ukrainian families here that are looking for homes, that are looking for individuals to take them in. And I don't know that I have an agency number that you can call if you'd like to put your name down for taking in a Ukrainian family. I would love to, absolutely love to. So I need to do a little bit of research and see who we can call or talk to if we want to be helping some Ukrainian families out. Now, but in Poland, there's a particular area there that's very idyllic. It's a lot of farming and all that. It's in the southeast border with Ukraine. And this is where there are a lot of Ukrainians who have left. And it has now become the busiest border crossing for Ukrainian refugees since the war. And this is because Ukrainians are gathering there wanting to go back into Ukraine. Wow. In February and March, refugees waited for hours, days, to cross into Poland. Now that things have calmed down a little bit, and because of the war, we find these individuals that are looking to come back in the United States are gathering at this border place and trying to do it. It's amazing. They say it's, some of the people, when asked, they say it's just a practical lesson that they were away for a while. Things have calmed down a little bit in where they're originally from, and they want to go back and protect their properties. So this has become a huge gathering point. And these people, they're fearless. They're not really fearful of what they could be walking back into. And a lot of them are going back and forth voluntarily. They'll leave their home, go into Poland for some R&R, and then they'll come back out, cross the border again, do some fighting, and then, you know, go back to Poland. But right now the emphasis is on going back in. Literally, there is a miles-long line of individual Ukrainians trying to go back to wherever they came from to reclaim their properties. And in some cases, like in Kharkiv, they've pushed the Russians over the border back into Russia. And even though there's a gathering there in that particular area to return to what I believe is the northeast part of that country, there's the worry that because the troops have crossed over into Russia, pushing some of the Russian soldiers back, this is going to be an extremely hot spot. And some of these individuals in other countries that are waiting to come back in could be knocked off by operatives. It's a small story coming out of the Kremlin that are in Poland or wherever, Lithuania, any of these places at border, and might be doing some horrible things to some of these Ukrainian families who are waiting to come back into the country. So, I mean, it's even down to that now where, you know, Russians are going after individuals who have left. Civilians. I know that doesn't make any sense. It's weird, but this thing has been weird from the very, very beginning. Very beginning. If you had the opportunity, and again, this is another question I've been asking a lot today, would you take in a Ukrainian family? How do you feel about that? Would that be something that you would feel good doing? Would you be able to do it? I would. I mean, I would be able to do it. I would love to do it. But it takes, you know, kind of a special person to want to do that, to share your home with non-English speaking individuals who are running away from a horrible war. But we're seeing more and more and more and more and more American families wanting to do this, and that's a good thing. A very good thing. Something else that's going on is Taiwan. There's some activity there. The United States is saying it's very deadly serious. That's their term. It's very quiet in this whole situation in the South China Sea, and they're quietly urging Taiwan to follow the Ukraine playbook for countering China. We'll talk about this extensively in the next hour, but let me give you just a little bit. You know, U.S. officials are pushing their Taiwanese counterparts with a brand new urgency to look at how Ukraine is being successful in fending off the Russian forces. And they want the Chinese, the Taiwanese, to use this as kind of a blueprint for, you know, countering a Chinese attack, if indeed there is one. And we've been telling you for weeks that the Chinese are working on it. They're working on, they think they're going to be thinking very soon, this is an opportune time to take it back. Take what back? Well, you know what I'm talking about. I would have thought personally, and again, this is just me, that the Chinese would have acted upon Taiwan by now, as far as we into this whole war between Russia and Ukraine. I would have thought for sure they would have made an attempt to snag Taiwan and take it back. They consider it's theirs anyway. What in theory could they be waiting for? Do they have military problems too, like the Russians that we don't know about? Is their military undercounted and can't be spread too thin? And I was fearful that, you know, it was going to be on two fronts. A war was being fought, one with Russia over here and one with China over here. But it hasn't happened yet. So for that, I'm kind of happy. Anyway, let's ease into the third hour on Newstalk 580-1059 KMJ. We'll play a little bit more with what the recommendation is from the United States government to the Taiwanese to make sure that they play hard like the Ukrainians are against the Russians. Although I think the Chinese are much better equipped mentally, physically, and or otherwise to do what they need to do. The Russians, I think, got caught with their pants down, so to speak. We'll be right back. This is KMJ.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.